we inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to The Core here on American Family Radio. Glad to have you with us today on the program. Walker Wildman here with you on this edition of At the Core. And we would love for you and everyone who has already subscribed to the podcast, thank you very much. Thank you. And for those who haven't, well, what better opportunity and time to subscribe to At the Core podcast than right now? So we publish a podcast each afternoon. We publish this show in the form of a podcast each afternoon, and you can subscribe to it wherever you listen to podcasts. All the major podcast platforms, you can subscribe to it. So just type in At the Core, click the subscribe button, and the latest show will be queued up in your library each and every day. Well, a couple of announcements. The Culture Warrior film is out. It's available now at culturewarrior.movie. So if you've been long awaiting to watch the Culture War film, it's out. It's available now. And we've had this little thing called an election kind of taking place. So it's overshadowed the release of our film slightly, but nonetheless, we're still promoting it and we're going to still continue to get the word out there. So culturewarrior.movie. You can watch the entire film, 96 minutes, for free by going to culturewarrior.movie. It's an excellent, excellent film. And we encourage you to go there and watch it now at culturewarrior.movie. Also, the Activate Summit, we're going to have that coming up in June of this upcoming year, 2025. Go to activate.afa.net, activate.afa.net if you want to join us in June, mid-June. Specific dates are at the website for the Activate Summit 2025. Excellent speakers, including Todd Herman, Frank Turek. We had Frank on last week to talk about it. Ed Battagliano, Abraham Hamilton III, and others will be there at the Activate Summit 2025. Activate.afa.net to check out more information about that. Moving into some of the stories I want to make sure we get to while our time is limited. This one of the major issues that President Trump spoke out about in recent weeks was the idea of recess appointments. And President Trump put out a statement in the midst of the Senate Majority Leader election that we weighed in on here with Rick Scott. And he stated that, look, anybody who's going to lead the Senate needs to be willing to go into recess so that I, as the president, can make recess appointments so I can expedite the confirmation process of my cabinet and other nomination picks. The reason for this is that President Trump was elected on a mandate to uproot, to overturn, to change in very unorthodox ways how Washington, D.C. operates. One of the ways to do that is to get his cabinet and other positions, other executive positions, get them in place in an expedited fashion so that the mandate that President Trump was elected on can actually come to pass, can be fulfilled. So this is not a unusual, out-of-the-box, foreign way of doing things. Recess appointments has been around since the dawn of our nation. That's why it's in the Constitution, Article 2. And so there's some in the conservative movement that are all of a sudden opposed to recess appointments, despite the fact that presidents have been making recess appointments since the early days and years of our nation. And so all of a sudden we think, so some people on our side think that it's 2024 and recess appointments aren't a thing anymore. What? Have you not read the Constitution? Have you not read our historical documents about how many presidents have made recess appointments? And our opening salvo is a conservative movement. Before President Trump, he hadn't even placed his hand on the Bible and hadn't even been sworn in yet, and we're opposing his recess appointments. Do we want to win or do we not? And I warned about this in the days following the election. Anybody who listens to this show understands what I'm talking about. I am clear-eyed. I told Bobby I didn't bring coffee in here because I'm so wound up. I just can't do caffeine right now. But here's a question for us. I'm talking to the evangelical Christian movement as a whole. The some 76% of voters that were evangelical Christians that put President Trump over the finish line in 2016 and now. Here's the question. Do we want to win or do we not? Because if we don't want to win, we can come up with all kinds of excuses about, well, President Trump shouldn't do this because I'm uncomfortable with it. President Trump shouldn't do recess appointments because it bypasses the Senate deliberation. Well, folks, the Senate doesn't really have the best track record of of doing the right thing. Why are we regurgitating the same old Bush-era talking points of the Senate and the House and the almighty Congress, and everything has to go through regular order? And no. As I've said, we are dealing with unorthodox circumstances. Our nation is in literally an emergency situation. We're on life support. And we want to squabble over whether President Trump can make a few recess appointments when the Senate goes on vacation. I mean, what are we doing? And let's go back. All right. Let's go back. Because the bragging about the history of the Senate and the deliberativeness of the Senate, give me a break. President Obama, 32 recess appointments. President Clinton, 139 recess appointments. President George Bush, 171 recess appointments. And it's 2024, and all of a sudden, we're against recess appointments. Where did this come from? Where on earth did this come from? And some of the same people that are against recess appointments now, all of a sudden, there's documentation of them promoting recess appointments when Bush was in control, when Bush was the president in 2004. So it's like, I just want to like grab people gently, firmly on their shoulders, and just do a little bit of a shake, nothing violent or anything, but just a little bit of a, like, you know how you do when you want to wake somebody up. You just kind of grab them and you just, hey, wake up. Like, this is where we are. But that's what the voters just did to our country and our elected officials. They just gave us a little wake up nudge. And we have arguably 2 years to get this stuff done. Our nation's on life support. We're in $36 trillion in debt. Our agencies, the agencies in Washington are so out of control. They're so rogue. I can't even put my mind around it. I can't even explain it. They want to shut us down. They want to put the Christians in jail. They're locking up the pro-lifers. The J6ers hadn't even had a trial yet. They went after President Trump, not only with lawsuits and lawfare, but with bullets. Illegal immigrants are coming across the border and raping our daughters. Cartels are smuggling in fentanyl, killing our brothers, our sisters, our uncles. The Marxists want to mutilate our kids in the name of transgenderism. Babies are being slaughtered by the hour by Planned Parenthood and the entire abortion apparatus. The military-industrial complex, they get giddy when we talk about war because they make a pretty penny off of war? Congressmen and senators are breaking the law by doing insider trading day in and day out. But if you and I don't pay $3 in taxes, the IRS come and bust up our small business. And I could go on for hours on the injustices and the upside downness, which is not even a word, but it is now, of what is going on in Washington, D.C. And so memo to everybody who loves our country, wants our country to be redeemed to some degree, and wants the evil, wicked, upside down people to be held accountable, we can't get distracted on these tertiary debates about process in the Senate. Like, let's pick our battles wisely, okay? And I'll tell you what battle we need to be fighting now. Number one, we need to be supporting President-elect Trump. Because clearly he's taking the mandate seriously. Look at his nominations. But we need to be fighting for pro-lifers that are fighters to be in some of these executive agencies. Like, to me, that's a viable, valid priority that we need to be talking about. Not bashing Trump, not bashing RFK Jr., but hey, let's don't forget, you know, 80% of Christians voted for President Trump. And the vast majority of them believe in the sanctity of human life. So we need some people that represent us in the executive agencies, including the Department of Health and Human Services. We can make that case in a respectable, noteworthy, convincing manner. But if we want to think about this practically, pragmatically, and really in a manner that is going to help this president be the most successful possible, arguing with him about recess appointments ain't going to get the job done. And blocking recess appointments is a weapon of the swamp. It's a tool of the establishment. Hence, Bush got recess appointments, Clinton got recess appointments, Obama got recess appointments, but all of a sudden Trump wants recess appointments, and no, we're not for recess appointments. We can't do that. Everybody's got to go through the Senate. Everybody's got to go through the Senate. Well, no, that's not constitutional. That's not a legal argument. That may be your opinion that you don't like recess appointments, but it's a reality. It's in the Constitution, and if you don't like what's in the Constitution, then you can amend it. Good luck getting 2/3 of the states. We can't even pass legislation, much less get 2/3 of the states to agree to anything. So if you just don't like recess appointments, that's fine, but that's not a legal or a constitutional argument. That's a I don't like that argument. And there's a lot of things in life that we may not like. President Trump is going to have recess appointments. Do the math. Those who haven't, do the math. Every single confirmation takes an average of 30 hours in the Senate. There are nearly 4,000 plus vacancies. Not all need confirmation approval. I get that. But let's just say hundreds for the sake of argument. There are hundreds of executive branch cabinet level positions that do need Senate confirmation in order for them to be official, to be sworn in. And in order to go through all of those, folks, we're going to be sitting here in 2 years. And Chuck E. Schumer and Nancy Pelosi and George Soros, they're going to have fundraised galore to unseat Republicans in the midterms. And we're going to be sitting here in 2 years, and mark my word, and Bobby can roll the clip in 2 years if we don't get our act together. We're going to be sitting here in 2 years, and the Congress is still going to be having hearings for Trump's appointments. So this is an emergency. Our nation's own life support, pull out the AED. Let's stop squabbling over recess appointments. President Trump is going to have recess appointments to expedite this process to uproot the disgust that is in Washington, D.C. So, folks, we've got to just get on board with disrupting the status quo in Washington. That's the mandate for us.
Hello, everyone. Tim Wildman here with American Family Association and American Family Radio. Hey, in 2025, we have a brand new tour available. It's in October, and it's going to Boston. What a wonderful trip this will be to see one of the most significant cities in all of American history. Boston, Lexington, Concord, and the whole story of the Freedom Trail. It's going to be absolutely wonderful. And that's in October of 2025. So we also have the tours of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon, and then the Colonial Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown tours as well. So that's coming up in 2025. If you want to read about any of these, go to wildmangroup.com, W-I-L-D-M-O-N, group.com, wildmangroup.com, for all the information on Boston, D.C., and Williamsburg. Hope to see you on one of these in 2025.
At the Core podcasts are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to The Core here on American Family Radio. Well, folks, this is a generational opportunity. The reason I'm so passionate about really not letting our foot off the pedal with this momentum of a complete rejection of the status quo in Washington with Trump's victory is I understand, and I hope you do. I know many of you do. I understand the implications and what's at stake with this generational opportunity. And I don't want to look back and go, yeah, we squandered it. I want to look back and say we made the most with the time that we were given. And that's a biblical precept. So we need to be maximizers of our time and our energy and our efforts. And Washington has a clear mandate. So we've just got to see this thing through the finish line. And I'm going to be the most ardent proponent of the mandate that was given to President Trump and his cabinet to uproot the problems that are in Washington, D.C. Well, moving on to our next guest we have on with us now, Indiana's Secretary of State, Diego Morales. He's with us now from the state of Indiana. Secretary Morales, welcome to the program.
Hey, it's good to be with you. Thanks for the opportunity.
Absolutely. You've been doing some critical work as the Secretary of State representing the state of Indiana, and I could go, you know, for a long time on the different things that you're working on. But what I wanted to specifically talk about today is your fight against ESG, environmental social governance, which is basically the woke investment type agenda. And also you've gone up against BlackRock with a cease and desist letter and a lot of other stuff that we could talk about. But before we jump into some of the specifics, some of the actions that you're taking on BlackRock and ESG, give us kind of a Cliff Notes version of what's wrong with ESG for Americans out there listening who are unsure about, you know, what's this whole ESG thing about and why is it problematic? Bring us up to speed.
Sure. Well, as you know, first of all, ESG is an investment principle that prioritizes investing based on factors other than return on investment. So for ESG purposes, that includes environmental, social, and governance. So investing, for example, investing in fossil fuels is a big no for these types of investments. Only in companies that take DEI in consideration for hiring practices. So if you can see there's a contradiction there, because I'm not sure if perhaps this is a good opportunity as well to share with your audience. You know, when I became the Secretary of State, I made history as the first Latino, the first Hispanic Secretary of State in the history of Indiana. And currently, I believe I'm perhaps the only legal immigrant Secretary of State in the nation. But I arrived here, you know, with hard work. You know, my parents taught me the importance of hard work, that there is no substitute against hard work, and I've been preparing myself. So no one has given me anything just because I'm Hispanic or I'm Latino or I have an accent. You can tell, hope your audience can tell that I have an accent, you know. But I'm the Secretary of State because I've been preparing myself with my own merits. And that's the way it should be. So I'm clearly against all this woke agenda that, they've been promoting. For example, the problems to start with, it's a problem because all these companies began to implement these investing practices. And these are multi-trillion dollars companies, by the way. Most of these issues under ESG get down to political fights, and the left is using companies like BlackRock and others to fight their political battles with other people's money. Mm. I'm, in addition to being the chief election officer in Indiana, which, by the way, we ran a great election, also I'm in charge of our securities division. So under our securities division, we are tasked with ensuring investors are protected from bad actors. I tell people my number one responsibility is to protect Hoosier investors. So that's what I'm doing, and I'm going to always continue to fight to make sure that I can protect Hoosier investors here in Indiana.
Once again, we're talking to the Indiana Secretary of State, Diego Morales. Secretary Morales, tell me about your actions against BlackRock. I know you've sent a cease and desist letter against BlackRock because this has to do, to your point, with even state employee investment retirement accounts, which falls within your purview and the purview of other state officials as well. But talk about your actions against BlackRock specifically.
Well, whether that can be a company like BlackRock, saying they're getting higher returns in ESG investments when that isn't true, or companies like BlackRock saying that they have funds that don't consider ESG when they have been on record saying the opposite. Also, if you were an investor and saying that you don't care about returns and want to invest in what will make the environment better, that would be fine. But they are taking your money, whether you say that or not, and investing using ESG principles and not prioritizing returns, which should be the number one goal. They are saying you'll get better returns with ESG investing when that is not the case. As I said, to me, it comes down to fight for my fellow Hoosiers. So when they invest, my job is to look out for them. So we want that to stop. Like you mentioned, my office issued a cease and desist order, and I'm just trying to do my job from what Hoosiers obviously elected me to do, since the securities division is under my office.
Let me ask you this, Secretary Morales. Once again, we're talking to Indiana Secretary of State. Specifically, we're talking about ESG and basically the woke investment movement that shifts money away from good quality returning investments and more towards politically oriented organizations and companies that don't necessarily draw a quality good return for the investors. But what do you see as the path forward? Do you see that we're winning this movement against DEI and ESG? Do you think we have the momentum on our side and it looks like we're going to win this, or is this still heavily entrenched in our financial institutions? Where do you kind of see where we are in this battle? What's your opinion on that?
Well, I'm proud to tell you that I joined my fellow Secretary of State from Mississippi. He was the first one to, fight against BlackRock and all the ESG investments. Indiana, we became the second state to join that effort. But also I'm proud to share with you that I have the support of our Attorney General here in Indiana to continue to protect Hoosier investors. Americans are already hurting because of the high inflation from the Biden-Harris administration that we've been seeing, these past 4 years. And we need to make sure that these same policies that have hurt so many Americans, and specifically so many Hoosiers here, and that have hurt our economy, doesn't hurt Americans and their future investment. So as I said, I'm always going to advocate for free enterprise, for my fellow Hoosiers to be prosperous, you know, and that's why I'm very excited that, you know, we elected President Trump. I believe I was the first Secretary of State to endorse President Trump way back, you know, mm-hmm. when he was in a tough primary. I was one of the first ones to endorse him. I've been on his side since day one, and I'm going to continue to support him because that's the right thing to do. Mm. So I'm proud to say that we are willing to continue this fight to protect Hoosier investors.
What's the latest? Earlier we talked about your actions against BlackRock specifically. They seem to be one of the worst offenders in this arena of forcing ESG on investors. Where are you on that? Are you guys officially suing BlackRock? Is this still pending? Are you guys kind of going back and forth? Where is the official? What's the official status of your action against BlackRock Inc.?
So, investigation on complaints regarding BlackRock ESG funds is still ongoing. So, they are still ongoing. Just to answer to your question, you know, through our involvement with securities registration, regulation, enforcement, consumer education and protection, we are aware of complaints and concerns about misrepresentation of ESG investments from individuals and institutional investors. So many Hoosiers, as you know, they manage their own investments and retirement savings, and a much larger number of Hoosiers are beneficiaries of institutionally managed pension funds. So I can tell you this, Indiana, yes, send a cease and desist order to them, ordering them to follow Indiana's law by stating, you know, they cease and desist from engaging in any acts violating the IUSA and rules of administrative order. So, again, it is still ongoing, but I want to remind your audience, my job is always to look out for the best interest of Hoosier investors here in Indiana.
Mm, absolutely. That's a priority for the voters there and for the citizens of Indiana. Hey, we've been talking to Indiana Secretary of State Diego Morales. Hey, Secretary, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate your fight against DEI and on behalf of the citizens of your state.
Thank you for the opportunity. God bless.
God bless you. Thank you so much. That's Diego Morales. He's the Secretary of State of the State of Indiana. And he and others have been leading the charge against this woke-based investment strategy that actually brings in very minuscule or rather mediocre returns when it comes to investments. And regardless of what the returns are, even if the returns are good, the problem is that that's not what the people's money that you're investing, as for example BlackRock, that are managing these massive funds. The question is do the people that have given you the privilege of managing their retirement accounts or their investment accounts, do they understand your reasoning behind the investment picks that you're choosing? For example, if you are implementing an ESG type standard into your investment strategy, do the investors, meaning that the people that are putting money into these retirement accounts or these investment accounts, do they know that that's your strategy, right? Because anybody who's been in this in the financial and investment world, disclosures are commonplace. And people whose money it is that's being invested have to know and consent to the investment strategy that takes place. For example, when you invest money with, for example, a broker, an investment manager, you're going to sign a bunch of disclaimers and forms, and you're going to agree on a strategy. You know, how aggressive do you want to be? What's your tolerance for loss? What's the time frame in which you want to be invested? Are there any sectors that you want to avoid? Are there any specific funds or stocks that you want to avoid? when investing. But what's been happening with these major funds like BlackRock, and BlackRock is not the only bad actor on the table here. Vanguard has some issues, and there's some other major players with similar issues. But what's happening is they've been deploying these ESG standards, and the investors, the original investors, have very little say, if any, on these strategies. And not to mention, a lot of these state employees don't have a whole lot of options when it comes to different investment funds. And that's why the Indiana Secretary of State has issued a cease and desist and is investigating BlackRock and others because of what could be construed as being deceptive practices, deceptive investment practices. So the more the American people are communicated to and educated on this issue of ESG and woke investment strategies, the more the American people are completely turned off to this. They completely are, it's unappetizing. And I would say you can bundle this topic right into the elections and the results of the elections. Because the Democrats have been pushing this garbage for the last 4 to 8 years. Meaning we need the Green New Deal. We need to limit fossil fuel emissions. We need to have solar panels on top of everybody's homes. We need to punish you and tax you because you drive a fossil fuel burning vehicle. I mean, the list goes on. I mean, Biden and Kamala Harris actually bragged about how they got the Green New Deal bundled in their Inflation Reduction Act. So I thought this was about inflation. No, it's about ESG. And there's reports now to show how fake the enthusiasm and momentum was for ESG standards, and specifically Green New Deal standards, to show how thin the layer of support was. A lot of these companies that are in the green energy, and it's really not green when you look into it, but for the sake of discussion, these green energies, they're starting to talk about bankruptcy. They're starting to talk about closing up shop. They're starting to talk about how they can't make it without subsidies. What's the electric vehicle market going to do without the $7,000+ tax credit? Here's the thing about America, and this is a beautiful thing, is when ideas are actually good, the consumers buy into it. But when different ideas are shady or non-specific or questionable, consumers don't buy into it. And the reality is that consumers haven't bought in to ESG standards.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Walker Wildman.
Welcome back to The Core here on American Family Radio. Glad to have you with us on the program. If you want to watch the program, you can go over to stream.afa.net, stream.afa.net. You can also check out our Facebook page, At The Core on Facebook. We're even live streaming the show over on X now and YouTube. We got a lot of different avenues for you to keep up with the program. As I mentioned in the first segment, the Culture Warrior film is available now, culturewarrior.movie. That's one item. Also, our Activate Summit is this summer in mid-June, activate.afa.net for more information. And then lastly, before I forget, before we wrap up today's program, our Holy Land trip in February of 2025, coming up in just a few months here, we actually have some slots available. So we've had some of you expressed interest over the last few months about wanting to go to the Holy Land. It's on your bucket list. It's on your wish list. Well, we actually had some seats open, about 7 seats remaining, I believe, for our trip in February to the Holy Land. So if you want more about that, go over to wildmangroup.com and you can check it out and register. Wildmangroup.com. You can check out the dates, the information, the pricing, and register there. And as I said last week, and I'll say it again, if you are uncomfortable with traveling to Israel, considering, you know, the conflicts that they've been engaged in the last year, then do not even think about it. Don't even sign up if you're uncomfortable in any regard with going to the Holy Land. So that's my disclaimer there. But if you're willing to go and you understand what all is involved and the risk, then we would be glad for you to join us. And just from a personal standpoint, if I didn't think it was safe, I wouldn't go. And I'm going. So moving on to our next guest, we have on with us now Representative John Lamar. He's out of District 8 in the state of Mississippi. He goes by Trey. Sorry, I was reading his driver's license name. But Trey Lamar is with us now. He's a House representative in the state of Mississippi covering District 8, which is the Senatobia area. And Tate County, is that right, Trey?
You got it. That's right.
Excellent. Well, hey, we've discussed this legislation before with Dr. Jameson Taylor, but you're reintroducing a bill that is really going to expand opportunity, not only for pro-life pregnancy clinics, but a lot of other things as well. This is a very good piece of legislation in Mississippi. It's called the Children's Promise Act. So give us a little background here.
Yeah. So, Walker, thanks for having me. First of all, we appreciate the opportunity to come on to your program, and we appreciate the message that you get out to the people all across America every day. So thanks for what you do. The Children's Promise Act is a piece of legislation that was enacted when I first became chairman of the Ways and Means Committee about 5 years ago. And legislation created was a business tax credit program in the state of Mississippi where businesses of any stripe could donate half of their tax liability, be either income tax or we've got it set up now where it can be on your property tax liability at the local level, in order to donate to either foster care nonprofits or education nonprofits that are serving really children and families all over the state of Mississippi. 2 years ago, we expanded that tax credit program to include crisis pregnancy centers. This was post Dobbs decision and all of that. And so now businesses have the same tax credit opportunities for our pregnancy centers that are located across the state. And so what this has done has really encouraged private sector investment into these nonprofits. And when we look at providing a tax credit, we try to, since I've been there, we try to focus on just a couple things. And it's nonprofits that provide services that are really core functions of government. A lot of times the nonprofit sector can perform those services better, particularly, you know, sometimes in our foster care environment. Also we look at nonprofits that save the taxpayers significant amounts of money. And so the foster care nonprofits, the education nonprofits, both fit into those categories. And we've been able to do a lot of good across the state. It's been extremely popular program. And as a result of that, we have been able to expand it over the years. And so hoping to do that again this next legislative session.
Well, your point about looking for ways to incentivize the private sector and nonprofits to jump in and fill some of these critical voids. I mean, this is like a no-brainer. And I want people to understand and just think about it. And a lot of people understand this, they know this. But for those who don't, the private sector does things better than the government like 9 out of 10 times, 99% of the time. There may be a few, you know, cases where, like military, for example, or law enforcement, where you say, well, that's really a core government function and that we don't need the private sector meddling in that. But when it comes to pregnancy resource centers, when it comes to education, nonprofits, and some of the organizations you described, Representative, these are nonprofits that do things very well and very efficiently with very little waste, if any. So to your point, there's a very compelling case out there to continue expanding these opportunities and allow the private sector to jump in and really turbocharge these excellent programs.
Yeah, no doubt. We, like I said, it's been very successful. But, you know, what we look at is when you look at a tax credit program, is are people using it? And, you know, some of these programs literally are used up in the first hour or so that they open up at the beginning of each year. And they've just been very, very popular. And again, for these businesses that donate, we do it responsibly. So we're not, you know, crippling the state budget or anything like that. But because there's a cap on it. But these businesses, they're basically giving part of their tax liability to their nonprofit that in turn saves the state tremendous amount of money, which in turn saves taxpayers a lot of dollars that they would otherwise be given to the state government. So it's a great program. We've got significant studies into each one of these programs and how much money they save the state of Mississippi and save the taxpayers. And that's the money side of it. The human element is just how much good we do for every child that is in a foster care environment. You know, these nonprofits that does not have to go into state custody saves the state tremendous amount of money. And on top of that, the success rates of getting those children into loving homes is just in a lot of ways better than state custody. And so you can't really put a price tag on that, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. And so we've been really excited about these tax credit programs and look forward to working with the House has passed this many times. We're looking forward to working with our friends in the Senate this year to expand these programs and put more dollars in those. So we're looking forward to that opportunity come January when the session starts.
Absolutely. Once again, we're talking to Representative Trey Lamar. He's out of District 8 in the state of Mississippi. One last question, Representative Lamar. What would be some kind of encouragement or tips or pointers you would give to other states? Maybe we have some state representatives across the country listening, or even just constituents that say, hey, I want to do this in my state. What would be some pointers or tips you would give them?
Well, first of all, I would say look at the Mississippi plan. We've been fortunate that the Mississippi plan, this Children's Promise Act, if you will, has been referred to over and over again as the model tax credit legislation for the entire country. And so I would say you don't have to invent the wheel. Look at what we've done. And then I would look at focus on the numbers, what we just talked about. Look at the focus on nonprofits that save the state of Mississippi, or in my case, the state of Mississippi, but whatever state you're in, save money, save government money and taxpayer dollars. And in this particular example, we're talking about education and we're talking about foster care. And like I said a minute ago, every child that does not have to go into state custody saves the state government tremendous amounts of money. And so look at those type of things. And I would feel fairly certain to say that your state's numbers are going to be similar to Mississippi's, and that in those areas, those nonprofits are going to be saving the state government and the taxpayers a lot of money. So, and if anybody wants to talk to me about what Mississippi has done, I'm happy to have those conversations, because it really has been a blessing for a lot of families, a lot of nonprofit organizations, but also is serving as a model for other states to look at.
Absolutely. Hey, one last thing. I know I keep saying one last thing. I sound like a Southern Baptist pastor, but seriously, as being over the Ways and Means Committee in the state of Mississippi, you're very familiar with the income tax debate. I know Mississippi's worked on that over the last few years, and we're surely but slowly beginning to phase that out. But President Trump has actually talked about getting rid of the federal income tax, which there's really a strong case to get rid of it because it's not constitutional, and it's a relatively modern phenomena, that is the federal income tax. But nonetheless, without getting in the weeds, what's your opinion on that? And what's your, for those who are wondering, you know, is that even the right thing to do? Is it viable to get rid of the federal income tax? What would be your response to that?
Yes. So I guess, first of all, I comment on the what Mississippi is doing. You know, I've learned a long time ago, no matter what the legislature does, the governor is usually going to get credit for it. In this case, and I'm fine with that. Tate Reeves is our current governor, and he and I agree tremendously. And anybody that's been around that process knows that that I have been the architect, if you will, or drafted the House proposals that have resulted in the further continual elimination of the income tax. And we're going to put forth a measure again this next session that would hopefully set in motion the eventual elimination of the income tax in Mississippi without any further legislative action. And we're working with our friends in the Senate on that. And I began years ago trying to convince and work with then Speaker Philip Gunn and now Speaker Jason White, who are both great friends of mine and have been great to work with on this topic. It's the reason why we should not tax work in the state of Mississippi. And so I'll let that segue into my answer for your question. And then just fundamentally, Walker, I just don't believe government should be taxing a man's work. I just don't. That's where I am. I believe if we were to set up our tax code today, we would not tax a man's work. And if you ask me, one of, you know, what is the thing that we as a government, what, or as a nation or as a state, what do we need probably more than anything, or as much as the next thing? It'd be definitely right there at the top. What do we need? And we need more people working. I know that's true in the state of Mississippi. We need more men out there taking care of their families and providing for their wives and their children.
Yes.
That's what we need more of. And so why in the world does a government tax the very thing that we need our citizens to do more of? It makes absolutely no sense when you think about it from that standpoint. And so can we unwind it? I'm an optimist eternally, so I think we can do anything. And I think that hopefully we're going to show the country that you can unwind it right here in the state of Mississippi. That's my goal. And could we do it on a national level? I think we could. I think a consumer-based tax code is a much more fair way to tax the people than one that taxes a man's work. And so that's what I would encourage my fellow legislators and Congress and across the country to consider.
Absolutely. And that's that the moral case in and of itself is strong enough to stand on its own. And then you layer on top of that the outcome-based results that we see across the country. I mean, every state that has gotten rid of or has never even really meddled with income tax does very well, very competitive among other states. So some of these states like California and New York that are leading the way and having the highest income tax, they're suffocating their economy. And people are fleeing that. So we need to be a state, Mississippi does, that draws people in, draws entrepreneurs in, small businesses, corporations, and workers as well, with eliminating the income tax completely. And I am biased because I am a tax-paying Mississippi resident, so I have some incentive here. Hey, Representative, we've been talking to Representative Trey Lamar from the state of Mississippi. Thanks so much, Representative Lamar, for all your work and for coming on the program.
Yeah, glad to be here, Walker. Again, appreciate what you do, and hopefully can come back sometime.
Absolutely. Appreciate that and all your work that you're doing. That's Representative Trey Lamar, and he's doing a lot of things. He just mentioned his fight to eliminate the income tax over the last several years. But what we brought him on today to talk about was this Children's Promise Act and how it's expanding opportunity for nonprofits in the state of Mississippi to expand their services and really lessen the burden on the state government when it comes to some of these functions, such as the foster care system, the pregnancy resource center system. This has proven a really, really good program in Mississippi where private companies are able to get a dollar-for-dollar tax credit when they donate to certain eligible nonprofits that are doing charitable work for the public, for the community. I mean, it's a no-brainer. And as I said earlier, and I say it every time this topic comes up, the private sector and nonprofits are 100 times more efficient and effective compared to the government, and that will always be the case.
Preborn celebrates that Roe versus Wade has been overturned. Roe has been responsible for the slaughter of over 63 million babies. Now the decision to abort a child will be left in the hands of the states, and sadly, abortions will continue in the most liberal states. Over the past 16 years, Preborn has positioned their clinics in the top abortion cities where 50% of abortions occur. Preborn's work of saving babies' lives continues at an even greater level as they save babies' lives and defend their centers from the radical hate groups who want to shut them down. Preborn's response is dependent on you, the pro-life community. Be a part of rescuing lives and changing hearts for Christ. $28 sponsors one ultrasound, and $140 will help to rescue five babies' lives. Dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or go to preborn.com. All gifts are tax deductible.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.